Welcome to the Tripod. We break down the NRL every game, every week from a pundit perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn, joined by the Podonis. We're here to live recap round 19. And that was madness. You just heard a reaction from the Craner Manor, Fear the Beard. Craner, why don't, he had an honourable house guest, Dan Lever. So two of our top admins together to watch those scenes. We can't bury the lead. I mean, 3-0 best bets. We won 7 in a row. We didn't get the mixed matchup. We lost a 23-1 multi on a very narrow AFL finish. We can talk about all that, but we should begin with what we've just witnessed, Podonis. Cowboys 27 beating West Tigers 26. So much happened just in the final 5 minutes of that game. We do win our best bet. Obviously, Cowboys get a valuable victory, heartbreaking defeat for the Tigers. And as happy as I am that a decision went our way and that we won a best bet after the siren, you've really got a feel for West and how that one ended.
Yeah, that was an absolute tragedy, you would say. The Cows win with a two-point conversion after the siren off a short kickoff attempt that the bunker ruled that Kyle Felker taken out, and it was an absolute joke of a call. So it's fair to say that the Tigers did get screwed at the end there after being down by 7 points with 5 minutes to go and scoring two tries when the game was seemingly done and dusted. At that point, I was more hopeful of a 13-plus and maybe the Tigers go for a short kickoff and it goes out again or it doesn't go 10 metres. And then we're a chance of getting a backdoor mixed matchup win with a 13-plus result. But the Tigers had plans of their own. They scored on the left-hand side there to Brent Naden. And then Adam Dewey with a great ball on halfway to set free Dane Laurie, who had a blinder himself, and it was an unbelievable performance from him at the back. And I, like many others, thought that the Cowboys were going to lose, and at $1.07, the game was over. And the short kickoff attempt, it was too long from Holmes at the end, and Valentine Holmes will probably be the first one to admit that. Cole felt, I don't see how he was run off the ball, and if you're a Tigers fan, you'd be absolutely spewing at that, and just brings up the same conspiracy theories, I guess, that the teams at the top get all the calls.
Yeah, you've almost got to unpack that game in rewind. So we're both in agreement, and I'm sure the comments are going to also support that too, that that's a shocker of a call. I don't know the technicality. Some people are saying, did the Cowboys even have a right to challenge that? Now, they did challenge earlier North Queensland, and they did not get the call overturned, but it was called inconclusive. So that's fine. Cowboys had a challenge up their sleeve. But because the ref didn't blow a penalty on the field, I'm not sure if the game ends, if you can challenge the final play of the game. Some people are questioning that there's no actual stoppage there. So what was the ref even giving the Cowboys the opportunity? That aside, they look at it, and I think it's pretty clear to see that it was Kapoa that was penalised? Just running back towards the ball. If you're going to say he shifted, it's you know, a matter of inches. He's basically just running the direction of the ball, pretty clear. I mean, it's the most pedantic penalty you could ever call, and it gives the Cowboys, obviously, a chance to have a shot at goal. Valentine Holmes, on his birthday, a chance to win the game and to set the scene for you guys. Our best bet was -9.5. We also said even play -10.5 for the Cowboys' second half. They're a 20-point favourite. They were down 10 at halftime, so it was kind of perfectly set up for us. We would win our best bet as long as the Cowboys won the game, which you still felt pretty comfortable with halftime. They're still like $1.50 live. The mixed matchup, we needed a 13-plus Cowboys win, which, again, had a chance. The Tigers got a second-half sin bin on Malmalo. They got an intercept try. Then obviously when the Cowboys kicked a field goal with like about 5 minutes to go, up 7, it's all set up for the backbreaking try and you win 13 plus, as you said, and that would have won the mixed matchup. So in a round where we swept our best bets again, we didn't win the mixed matchup again. that hurts because we're in a great position on the back of Melbourne not scoring many. But all that aside, the Tigers scored two tries in the final 3 minutes. Now, one thing, they didn't convert either of them. You get either of those conversions, it wouldn't have mattered. You would have been up three or more. You know, maybe you would have had to survive a final play or whatever. Even the final try that the Tigers scored with 90 seconds to go, the clock stopped. Then it started again. It ran for over 60 seconds while Dewey was lining up his kick. He was waiting. The clock was still running. Dewey started his run up to kick that final conversion, which would have made the deficit three. Even while the clock was still running, I think he figured by the time he'd launched the ball, you know, by the time it landed, it would be game over. Dead set. The clock stopped with 1 second to go. So if he had waited one more second, there would not have even been a kickoff. That's how crazy it is. But say all that to say it shouldn't have mattered because it's a horrendous call. And, you know, it's not going to cost the Tigers anything. Maybe it's the difference between winning a wooden spoon or not, which is, you know, not a bit of a shame for a club. Nobody wants to be a part of that. It's not going to cost them their season, so to speak. But at the other end of the ladder, there's people commenting, I'm sure, support teams like Cronulla, Brisbane, maybe Melbourne. We'll talk about them. And maybe it's the difference in who, you know, avoids Penrith in the finals. Maybe it's the difference who gets to play at home in the first week of the finals in the prelims. So there are big ramifications. Earlier in the game, the Tigers really took it to the Cowboys, building that lead in the first half after the Cowboys scored first and looked like they were willing to play a lot of positive footy and really open Wes up. Wes served it right back to the Cows. Cowboys made a lot of first half errors. That put them in a hole to climb out of. Then it looked like they had completely climbed out and were going to win easily, as I say, building that lead before that crazy comeback. And really, Wes, those two tries, they did enough to win the game, didn't they? So that's a brutal one, and it's going to be a tough one for them to shake off. Give me anything else, any other thoughts on that game, Pedonis, while I catch up on all these comments. There seems to be a ton firing through.
Yeah, no worries. Just on that as well, the clock did stop with 5 seconds to go, just to correct something you just said at the end there. So Dewey did wait, but the clock stopped with 5 seconds. So I don't know what the rule is, whether or not there's 60 seconds to take the conversion and line it up. But yeah, for mine, I think the NRL needs to go back to what other sports around the world have in America. When you're in the final 5 minutes, if there's a stoppage in play, the clock's just got to stop. And then there should have been a minute 22 left off the kickoff rather than 1 second.
It's a weird one how even when the clock stops, though, then it starts again just for the duration of the kick. And like a kick usually takes like 3, 4, 5 seconds. So it's crazy. Like it literally comes down to the ground official. And you wonder if the fact that it is someone employed by the Cowboys that may, you know, at a different ground, maybe they just let the ball hit the ground, they stop it. I will try and call out some of these questions. Unbelievable by North Queensland. Barney says, the worst call of all time. Absolute disgrace. Ramification top four spots. Reverse the outcome. FFS, of course, a Broncos fan. Phil says, Bunker sided with Tigers all game till the final play. Even Brandy in commentary personally called out Ashley Klein and said he'd had a shocker. Andrew says Tigers forward passes all day. So some people saying that it comes back around. Sammy, absolute effing robbery. Barney, not allowed to challenge. Paul, no way that was a penalty, but typical NRL. Booney, I support the Cowboys second to Broncos, but that was not a penalty. And captain's challenge should never have happened. No clock consistency, worst decision of all time. You reckon Klein, I'm just reading a bunch of these comments, you reckon the NRL will drop Klein? I think they will have to have a response to this, but it doesn't. It's not going to make the Tigers feel any better, but they'll have their token response. I'm sure Annesley will have something to say about it tomorrow. Klein should resign. What about yesterday? Klein's call, it was just a tackle. That was Finucane on Crichton, I think, which we can talk about too, in Panthers, Sharks. Geez, too many comments to even catch up on, but I'll keep putting them up on the screen. Let's reverse all the way back around to the beginning of the round, which was a pretty crazy result. And you would have been happy with this one, Pedonis, because it was your Broncos, 36, blowing out the Parramatta Eels. Broncos were 4.5-point underdogs, and it was never really very close in wet conditions at CommBank Stadium.
Yeah, this was set up as a looming top four battle on Thursday night. Brisbane get all their returning origin players. And you could really see the confidence that those guys did bring back to the side. I think Parramatta scored the first try and Brisbane couldn't complete a set in the first 10 minutes. They were on the back foot. They had three drops in their own 40-meter line coming out of yardage. Parramatta scores. But then from the 15th minute to the 35th minute, it was just all Brisbane. And they were rolling through Parramatta's middle. And you wouldn't even know it was wet conditions. Such was some of the play and the attacking flair that the Broncos did have. Some of the combinations between Tessie New, Ezra Mamm, Adam Reynolds was the king on the night, kicking the corners and setting the game up for them. And I think at halftime, Parramatta had a sin bin off a professional foul, and they did get that late try just before halftime. But I think just after halftime, when Parramatta dropped it off the kickoff and Brisbane scored a try to put the margin back to 20 points, I think that was the nail in the coffin. And then Parramatta had all the running in the second half. And I think the story of that game was the story of two halves being Brisbane's attack in the first half and then how good their defence was in the second half. And the game reminded me similar in 2015 when they had that grand final run and after Origin when they had a reset and they went down to Melbourne and they only conceded one try to Melbourne and won the game 12-6. And that had a similar vibe to me of this one where Brisbane were just too strong and Parramatta can try to lick their wounds and rebuild again for the coming few weeks because they do have a really tough draw. So the top four is going to be hard for them, but Brisbane looking good for a top four, which is pleasing for myself and many other pod followers.
It's a double whammy for Parramatta because it's 2 points you kind of expect to pick up. You're at home. These are the kind of games could end up being 4-point games, as we talked about on Wednesday. You drop it, so it's the result that hurts you, but it's the performance as well. It shows you nothing that would suggest that you are worthy of making the top four. So now Parramatta have got to regroup and regroup quickly because that was quite disappointing. They got blown off the park early. You know the game I thought about watching this one? I thought about how it was only 3 years ago that the Broncos played Parramatta in the first week of the finals and Parramatta thrashed the Broncos by 50. And, you know, the same venue, and it's got a new name now. Parramatta's team hasn't changed that much, but now it was Brisbane coming in and thumping Parra, and how much the Brisbane side has turned around. And there's not that many players that would have been part of that that flogging because there's been a lot of turnover. But the Kevolution in full effect, Brisbane making that surge. I know that's part of the reason why there's some people commenting unhappy with the result we just witnessed because they're Broncos fans, and it could be the difference in, you know, who's hosting. Imagine if you got like a Queensland derby, you know, in the finals or something, or a prelim. That result might decide where that game is. But I just thought Brisbane. I actually don't know if I take away a heap from Parramatta because Brisbane were almost flawless in that first half. Like scoring that try where they had the double kick. I think it was a ricocheted kick and Brent Gregory kicks ahead. And Corey Oates, like such an error-prone player, for him to pick up a bobbling, skidding ball at full speed, pick it up like an inch off the ground and score, you just kind of thought it's going to be Brisbane's night if they can do things like that. Nothing seemed to go right for Parramatta. And they were always chasing the game. And we've seen a couple times, like the one that comes to mind is the Bunnies game a few weeks ago in poor conditions. I don't know. They side that loves to offload, can't offload as much in the wet. They really struggled. They were second best against Brisbane. So a huge result for the visitors on that occasion. On Friday, to set the scene before the game, this is Dragons-Seagulls, where the Dragons did win 20-6. We knew on Wednesday that Jake Trbojevic had COVID. We still leaned to Seagulls, but in the next 24 hours, the Seagulls additionally lost Lachie Croker and Andrew Davey. The line didn't really move too much. I mean, you could still get +2.5 on the Dragons. In the forum, I said, look, at that point, the Dragons look quite enticing. And in the end, they pulled a big win that could put a bit of a dent in Manly's finals hopes. The very same week that whispers came out that Tom Trbojevic was not ruled out for the season. So you've gone from a high to a bit of a low for the Manly boys, but honest.
Yeah, it was. And did we see the 2022 Dally M medalist perform again today with Ben Hunt? So he was the leading voter when it went behind closed doors. And I think every time the Dragons have won since then, including Origin 3s, he's accrued points and he was phenomenal again today. And this was just more of a case of whoever was better in the conditions because this is when Friday night in Sydney, it was pretty wet and it was monsoon conditions over at Cogger and whoever handled the best one. And that was, I think it was categorized by Ben Hunt's first try he scored where he dummied the ball, got hit and bumped about 6 meters out from the line. And then he just kept going. He ran and dived and slid from 5 meters.
He slipped over, which was what made him beat the tackler. Yeah, that's right.
It was an inadvertent tackle break, but it got the result in the end. And I think Manly were coming to get him in the second half when they had a bit more ball, but the Dragons proved a bit too strong on the night. And I think those COVID outs did have some disruption to Manly's camp, and they definitely missed Jake Trbojevic in the center there because he really shores up that ruck. And but yeah, there were times in the second half where Manly kept going left and to Lomax's side in the second half, and they're making almost a line break or half break every time they shifted the ball, but just in the end, too many mistakes, and it was that 12-point lead that was too big to overcome. Dragons kept
the top eight. You lose. That's right. We said that the Dragons might win this one. We don't expect them to make the eight. And even off the back of that win, I actually don't see anybody that's in the eight currently falling out. People are saying like Canberra Raiders, who we'll get to next, have got probably the most favorable run of anyone. But the side we're going to talk about as well, you know, like sides like Roosters and Rabbitohs, they've got to be making the finals. They're top eight caliber sides. But so a good win for the Dragons certainly keeps them in the hunt. You know, it makes your games meaningful in the final 6 weeks because you're definitely in the mix, right? But for Manly, they absolutely missed those three starting forwards not being able to play. And then they picked up injuries in the game. Like Garrick was not himself, copped a knock or went in with something. Olakau'atu, same story. I think he got an injury in the game and kind of carried it and had to. And Aloye, and that could be the most serious of the lot, knee injury, I believe, and he was forced off the field, and he could be out for a few weeks, and he's probably been their best, you know, best prop for Manly. So they missed all those guys, and it allowed the Dragons to, especially playing with the lead in poor conditions, to control the game, and Manly did kind of make them sweat late, although Manly trying to chase points, forced an error, and the Dragons scored right on the siren and kicked from the sideline as well. So it extended the score a little bit further out that didn't represent how close that game was. But as I say, it's a type of game for Manly that's on the outside looking in will be disappointed they dropped it, and terrible timing to lose so many players in such a short period of time. The Knights lost a very important player a few minutes into this game, which was a 42-12 defeat at the hands of the Sydney Roosters, which is good for us because our best bet was simply Roosters -9.5. And hey, we took that bet when we didn't know if Manu was going to play. And we were kind of hoping that he would play and that it might have just been a minor calf strain or a cramp. In the end, Joey Manu doesn't play. So that's, you know, kind of unlucky for us. But we got 9.5 on Wednesday. The line was still 8.5, 9.5 on game day. So we had a fair line. And watching the game, it was anything but fair. The Roosters destroyed the Knights. I've got to say a few things about this game, but I'll throw it to you, Podonis. But one thing is, after a few weeks just complaining, it seems like complaining and criticising, and I reckon fairly, but criticising O'Brien every week, boy, I've got to say it felt nice to bet against an Adam O'Brien coach side that at this point in the season might be dead. And you made this point on Wednesday, and you liked the Roosters more than I did. I originally thought, yeah, I could only play Roosters, but they've just had a big win. The Knights have got flogged the last couple of weeks. It's not going to be great value because no one's going to be playing Knights. But you made the point, when you start to get late in the season and you got one team that's still got their whole season ahead of them, the Roosters still believe they can make a run and make noise, and they've got the personnel to do it. You got another team, Knights. They're not going anywhere. Like, what are they going to try and get a moral victory here and there? But it's a side that's just not performing anywhere near where they should be, and is having a very disappointing season, probably wants it to end. That's a live team versus a dead team, and the line should not be anywhere near 10 for a game like that.
Yeah, and that's what I felt on Wednesday. And the Roosters were my personal favourite play of the round, and I'm glad that they picked up where they left off in that second half. Knights did come out to play in that first 10-15 minutes, and I think back to that break that they did make when Suaalii put Tedesco through off a fumble intercept, and Frizzell chases Tedesco and stops a certain try. And then I was a bit nervous because I thought that the Knights have come to play and they've shown some intensity. But then once the Roosters got their fair share of ball after the Knights had a good run on the Roosters goal line, it was just all one-way traffic. And it was stemmed from Keary, who was fantastic. And Tedesco, I think he had his best game all season, scoring tries for fun. And the Knights put on a couple of late tries when the game was pretty much over, when really the Roosters should have probably kept them to a shutout, really. And I was pretty disappointed in the Knights, considering, as you said, all they have to do is just pick their pick and choose some of their games to put something in front of their fans. They can't make the finals. They've got nothing to play for. Some score some points and have some fun. And at 0-0, after the first 5 minutes, they get a penalty and they take the two. And that sort of sums up where the Knights are at. Very disappointing, but the Roosters all class and they're starting to make a run, Jacob.
Yeah, so the Knights did lead 2-0. Then the Roosters scored the next 42 points. And then it was only a couple of backdoor tries that pulled the score to a 30-point deficit, which is still nothing to be happy about out in your home, in front of your home fans. And O'Brien says, oh, we finally unleashed the shackles at the end, as if to say, oh, we had that in us the whole time. No, you scored two tries at the end of a game when a team put their cue in the rack when you were down 40. That does not, it's again, it's what I'm talking about, where he try and cherry picks the best 5 minutes of any game and then says, well, if we would have played the way that the game went in that 5 minutes that was our absolute best and everything went our way, we would have been okay, as if they can bottle that up. But they got bigger issues. The news has come out, which we haven't mentioned yet, but Ponga is going to be out for the season and he was knocked out early in this game. And I'm a big fan of Callum Ponga, and he does cop a lot of criticism. And the criticism, I think a lot of it's unfair because it's around, you know, injuries that he's had. And then people say soft and injury prone. A lot of injuries are just bad luck as well. And then people question his performance and effort and stuff. But he has played on a team that's really struggled. You just don't shine. I've made the point before that if Callum Ponga was the fullback of the Roosters or the Panthers or the Storm, okay, he'd be even higher regarded. And we saw that in the highest level of the game. State of Origin, he was one of the very best players in the series, and Queensland don't win it without him. So I'm qualifying that because I'm about to add insult to injury, and people can let me know what they think about this. But Ponga is making a run. He's kind of falling in the tackle, but either way, he cops a high shot from Matt Lodge. Now, Matt Lodge smacks him across the chops. This is just my opinion as well, right? He feels the contact and wants to sell it, and he goes limp after he feels the whack in the face. And by going limp, he actually, when he hits the ground, his head swings back and cracks the ground, and that causes the concussion. So I hate to say it, but in my opinion, he was trying to milk the penalty, and by flopping, essentially, when he felt the contact in the face, it caused him. I really don't feel like the tackle caused him to jolt and hit his head on the ground. It really looked like he tried to sell the penalty and oversold it, flopped his body too hard, banged the back of his head on the turf, ends up getting an HIA, sent for an HIA, and then ruled out the game. And now, as we know, the season. And I've seen that happen a few times in games. Like a couple of weeks ago, Dom Young tried to sell the contact when Latrell Mitchell got him high. And because he stayed down extra long, he had to go off for an HIA. And then the Knights really missed Dom Young. And then the next 15 minutes, the Rabbitohs got back in the game. I remember Origin 3. Burton felt high contact, stayed down, face down, earned his team a penalty, but then didn't get sent at HIA. And I was really fuming. I'm like, hey, if you're going to try and milk a penalty, you got to go off HIA because you're showing a concussion symptom by, you know, by laying still. So it's a funny one, isn't it? I think it's thin ice to skate on when these players want to make sure the contact is noticed, but they also don't necessarily, they don't want to, you know, hurt their team by going off for an HIA. Am I the only one who thought that? Maybe that's just way too harsh. And I do still feel bad for Ponga. But I wonder, because I heard, you know, he was really upset. I almost wonder if he felt like he regretted what happened in that moment. Did you see it that way, Panonis, or just me?
It definitely was minimal contact from Matt Lodge. I think it was more of a swinging arm. And it didn't have any intent in it. So I think Ponga did get concussed via the whiplash. That's what I picked up live as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as what you did to say that he was trying to milk it. I think that was just the way he fell on the ground. But, yeah, a lot of plays definitely do it. And it even happened today, which we can talk about later in the Dogs game, where there was a head eye on Josh Jackson and he stayed down feigning an injury. And I thought the NRL stamped that out last year. And if that was happening, if they missed it on the field live, then they weren't going to call a penalty anymore. But it seems like they are. They are starting to call penalties. So that might creep back into the game. Which we hope not, but yeah, I definitely feel with Ponga, it was a whiplash.
Yeah, I mean, players will try and milk it late in the count. They feel the contacts. They kind of know that if they stay down, it gets looked at. But there's a comment coming through that my conspiracy theory on Ponga is ridiculous and it's just a glass jaw. So maybe I'm wrong and maybe, you know, Ponga's not at fault at all. But I did kind of feel like everyone, it's easy to say, oh, Matt Lodge, because he's a thug, you know, that he knocked Ponga out and stuff. But I didn't exactly see it that way, to be honest. Now, we'll move to Saturday. There was a couple of, upsets on the cards. But before we get there, we should actually check in and see how the bookies went in this wild round as well, because I have got a clip that's been sent through from Tristan at Top Sport.
G'day, Tripod family. An up and down round of football that started with a sizable upset, the Broncos against the Eels, where the Broncos actually backed reasonably well at the start late. Obviously, them getting the result was helpful for us with multis. And then there was a, despite the Manly players, three of the Manly players coming out of the game on Friday night, there was a strong push for them. So we started the weekend pretty well, but it all went pretty pear-shaped after that. The Roosters were a massive go. The Bunnies were one of the biggest goes I've seen for a long time, back from $2.20 into favourites. They were smashed and punters were all over them. And then the game today between the Titans and the Bulldogs, it was just unrelenting for the overs. So punters certainly finished on top. We needed the Warriors. If the Warriors could have held on after their big halftime lead against the Raiders, that would have been a really handy result. But obviously the Raiders came home too strong. But yeah, the last game, I'm doing this at halftime. It's a very surprising scoreline at the moment. I think everyone expected the Cowboys to be way too good for the Tigers, and they might still end up being that way. But at the moment, the Tigers have certainly been competitive. So that game will probably dictate where things finish for us for the weekend. If the Tigers could cause an upset, then we might sneak our nose in front. We have got a pretty ugly split, which is looking very ominous right at the moment. So hopefully whoever had a punt on the weekend had a good one, and we will speak to you on Wednesday.
Everyone, spare a thought for Tristan and the rest of the bookies. Yeah, right. But they would have loved that West Tigers win, and they would have thought that they had it. I'm sure it would have been a multi-killer. I know, you know, when you get a team that's like $1.07, I don't even know if people throw them in their multis. I'm sure some do, though. So that's interesting to know not surprisingly, was not the result Toppy would have wanted with the Cowboys coming back from the death. It's a funny one, because Cowboys-Tigers game, like, is that a bad beat if we lose it? Because I could argue we only needed the Cowboys to win the game. They're up 7 with 5 minutes to go. So if the Cowboys lose, you're going, how the hell did the Tigers score 2 tries in the final 3 minutes? But they end up winning, and you say, how the hell did the Cowboys win? They never should have got a penalty. So in terms of best bets, we've certainly been on the wrong end of plenty of calls and final play scores. So we'll take it. And I'm sure everyone who had the Cowboys and needed that for a multi or a same game or whatever, you'll take it, but it wouldn't go as far to say you're on the right side. And I'm going to ask you about this game, and Tristan spoke about it. Raiders 26, Warriors 14. It was, in fact, 14-0 to the Warriors at halftime. So when you watch a game like this, which side do you end up thinking in your mind was the right side? Because on Wednesday, you were talking about you would like to play the Raiders minus 11.5, or even better bet ended up being minus 5.5. Second half, which you did throw in a multi. Do you say, Podonis, well, they were down 14-0 and they still covered, so it goes to show what a great side Raiders were? Or is the fact that the Warriors were up 14-0 and the Raiders never looked like covering at all and somehow did mean that the Warriors and any Warriors backers should feel a bit hard done by?
Yeah, I think it's more of a case of Canberra in that first half didn't play to their potential, and the Warriors jumped out to a great lead and scored 2 tries, and Canberra made plenty of mistakes. But I think the story of that first half was how good the Warriors' goal line defense was, which hasn't been there all season. And I think they put in their best effort defensively, and Canberra, I think, had about 3 or 4 times where they were stopped millimeters away from the try line. And then in the second half, it was completely different Warriors side, where Canberra sort of steamrolled them. Jack Wyden had 2 massive plays with 2 40-20s, and he almost got a third one as well, which was just a complete momentum changer. And then the story of the game was that there was an error from Harris DeVita at fullback, and one of the things that Stacey Jones dropped Reece Walsh for was his defensive liabilities. That's what he said during the week. And then once Canberra did hit the lead, I only thought one team was going to win it. I think they could have even extended the scoreline even more had it not been for Ricky Stewart taking 2 penalty goals late in that game to go from 8 to 10 and then from 10 to 12. I don't really see the benefit from 8 to 10, because all it does is you just take away field position and the opposition has a chance to go for a short kickoff and get into your half again, which that seems to me a bit crazy, because it's still a 2-score game at that point anyway. But I think Canberra had to win this game. given that what they would have saw just before on Friday night was the Dragons winning and the Roosters winning. So I think Canberra had to win to keep in touch with that top eight because there's four sides on 20 points in a logjam. So maybe that pressure, maybe in that first half, it was a little bit much for them. They played a bit frantic and maybe they felt it. But I think in the second half, they showed their class to come over the top of the Warriors, who were struggling a bit. But they get a big game this week in front of their home fans to rectify that. But it was a much improved effort from them. But Ricky Stewart pulled a calf on the sideline, which was funny to watch. And I think it shows the highs and lows of the NRL where you can be behind and then come back. And I think the story of this weekend was a lot of big favourites all having to come from behind, Penrith and the Cowboys included. So it was definitely a wild round 19.
Yeah, it made me think, geez, there have been some crazy games between the Warriors and the Raiders in Canberra, and I've seen the Warriors go down there and beat them before, and you didn't really expect that to happen, especially after the Raiders were able to win in Melbourne last week, and they're, you know, the season's still alive. You think they're going to take care of business. Then you're watching the game going, they're going to blow this, and they've just been they haven't come out of the blocks, and the Warriors kind of shocked them, and the Warriors look switched on here. But then as the Raiders climbed back into the game, it was anyone's with like 20, 15 to go, and then I think, yeah, that second White and 40-20 was massive. They scored off the back of that Harawira Naira, which I think was where Ricky tore the calf in celebration. So that was huge. I know you're also disappointed kicking those late two penalty goals, although someone out there that bet -11.5 would be very happy. You had a same game multi on Dabble and needed over 5.5 Raiders tries, right? So the last thing you need when they're on 5 tries, if I'm recalling that correctly, is to kick. Oh, they had 4, so it would have still taken a bit of work anyway. They kicked away those. I guess just take time off the clock and close out a win, an important win that keeps Canberra's season alive. And look, you put me on the spot, and some people have asked me this weekend who's going to make the 8, and I believe Raiders will fall short and maybe still rue some blown leads from earlier in the year. But again, they are absolutely in the hunt. And the Warriors go back home, that's a positive, and play Melbourne, which in a way is not as frightening as it kind of looked a few weeks ago of a prospect either. But you mentioned a decent favourite having to come from behind at home. That was the same story Saturday night between Panthers and Sharks, because the Sharks did lead this game 10-0 before the Penrith Panthers ultimately did win 20-10. How did you see it?
Yeah, the Sharks started well, and you could tell that they were the side that took all the form and the momentum into the game, having won 2 games against Melbourne and the Cowboys, albeit we made a case on Wednesday that you can pinpoint a few issues with that win, and maybe it was a little bit phony heading into it for the Sharks, but they definitely started the stronger of the two. And then Moylan's try, we have to just call it for what it is. I think it was held up and he was short. And I'm surprised that the bunker didn't even stop the game to have a deep look at it. It almost seemed like they just popped up that try confirmed on the screen within seconds after only looking at one replay. But if you asked Isaiah Yeo after the game, he definitely felt like he held him up. And the replay, I thought it was pretty conclusive, but a bit of a disappointing one. And then Penrith turned it on from there, dominating the field position and making a ton of errors. Penrith weren't even nowhere near their best. And they scored a late try to send it to a 10-point margin in the end. But the cover was never really in doubt. If you were on the Sharks at 14-10, you always had that buffer in you. And I think the Sharks are going to be better for the run, but I think they fall short against some of these big sides. And I think their forward pack misses the experience. And when you talk about Dale Finucane's hit on Crichton, and I think that is a clean penalty in NRL. I understand that it's a headbutt and it's accidental, but sometimes we get these penalties where there's a light touch on someone's nose and it's a penalty, but something like that, as brutal as that hit, when you're coming in with all that force, and I'd call it reckless because there's no control of his actions, regardless of what part of your body hits the opposition's head, but all you have to do is look at the damage as well. And the fact that he was charged today, I think, shows that it should have been a penalty, but nonetheless, Penrith roll on. They've only lost the one game, and I think they're clear now. The minor premiership's almost wrapped up, 8 points ahead, and it's going to be pretty hard to stop them.
Yeah, a slow start, which you maybe in hindsight you can say predictable because they had the shorter prep because they gave all those players like a full week off after Origin. Of course, 7 Origin players returning to this Penrith side. Find themselves 10-0 down. Look, the Moylan try, well, first of all, it was 6-on-2. If he would have just passed once or twice more, you know, put it through the hands to the left. They score easily. He takes on his old side himself. I'm with you. I think he probably didn't score, but I don't know if it would have been overturned just because maybe you couldn't be certain when the ball first hit the ground. Was it short of the line? Probably, but there was no like certain angle that proved that. And then he was held up. So even if they'd reviewed it and looked closer, like the weird thing with the bunker is, even though they say try confirm, they have had a quick look at it. So maybe they felt that way. Regardless, I thought the key moment was the try in the first set of the second half. I mean, how can the Sharkies work so hard in the first half and then come out second half and let in a 50-meter try in the very first set, which allowed the Panthers to get in front? But as you say, it's 14-10 with like 3 minutes to go. So I think this will give a lot of confidence to the Sharks that, like, they're not completely, you know, in a different stratosphere to Penrith. Like, if they face them again, if they have to get through them in a finals game, they're going to feel that they can get into an arm wrestle and they can compete. I think anybody knows you're going to need some fortune to go your way. You're going to need to really execute and take chances that are presented to you. You also just don't know which players are going to be available. And this goes back to Wednesday and why I said I'd still take the field over the Panthers, because there's still a fair bit of footy to be played before we get these games that are for all the marbles. But it's a case of taking care of business for Penrith. And it's a case of, well, the Sharkies had a tough slate of opponents, but they got some valuable wins over Melbourne and North Queensland when those sides weren't at their best. And then they played Penrith at their best. They weren't really under pressure. It would have been an absolute bonus if the Sharkies won this. And, of course, when you're up 10-0, you dare to dream. But I'm sure the fact that they were narrowly defeated gives them confidence that they can compete, but also, you know, some learnings out of that one of from the benchmark of the competition. Now, the side that was the benchmark of the competition for, I don't know, just about the last decade, maybe arguably the last 15, 20 years, when I remember on Wednesday I spoke about how long the Storm have been in contention. They went down for their fourth straight defeat and they lost 24-12 to the Rabbitohs. And that was fine for us with our best bet, getting up plus half a try. Well, it's 4-2, so you win that by 2.5 tries. And we also, that was good for the mixed matchup, although it fell short because of the crazy result in Townsville today, holding the Storm to only 12 points. And, you know, some games, like the game we just spoke about, Podonis, Sharks lost by 10. It was a bit closer than that. You know, the Dragons beat Manly by 14. It was a bit closer than that. In this one, it's 24-12, and the Storm got a kind of try out of nothing just before half time off a scrum, like a 60 meter tackle break and try by Seve, and then a late one. But honestly, they got totally outclassed and outmuscled. And I know they've got like Brandon Smith will come back to this side, but that's about it, unless they do pick someone up before the August 1 deadline to cover fullback. But this is a side that is seriously struggling at this point.
Yeah, they look a shell of their former selves, don't they? And this is one, it was 24-12, as you said, but this had a 20-plus all over it, given how dominant Souths were. And I think Melbourne were pretty fortunate throughout general play, because I felt like a lot of the ruck speed was slowed down and there was countless six-again calls that I felt could have been six-again calls and penalties that Souths just didn't get calls on the night. And I'm not sure whether or not that was put on your tinfoil hat, whether the refs want to try to give the Storm a leg up, knowing that they are struggling. But I don't know. To me, Melbourne aren't the same side. Defensively, they're frail on the edges. And all you have to do is just look at the very first try of the game where Clow Matangi goes in untouched after 60 seconds. And they created a 4-on-2 after the first set defensively. So at that point, no one's tired. No one's stretched. The game isn't under any fatigue. And that sums up where the Storm are at. And South put in a great effort. And Alex Johnson scored 2 tries. And both of those tries were brilliant finishing, really. The way that he was able to just manipulate the space and beat a defender. He's actually a phenomenal finisher, and credit to him that his season goes on, and that there was a lot of talk in the group this week about leading try scorer for the year, and someone posted him at a value bet at $1.50, which isn't traditional value, but I think it was a bookie error that was taken advantage of, and that's even if he gets injured and doesn't play again, that's pretty much all but certain. But South's rolling right now, sitting 6 at the moment, and top 4 is a live chance for them, depending on how they go heading into the back 5 to 6 weeks, because they do have a tough draw. But you wouldn't want to be facing them, would you, Jacob?
No, I mean, they're a different team with Latrell back. I mean, this team made the grand final last year. And let's not forget, they made the grand final without Latrell. But at the start of the year, the whole narrative around South Sydney was how much they miss Reynolds. But now you're bringing Latrell back into this team, obviously, after all that rehab overseas. And he's the form player in the competition. And again, he had his way with the Storm and had some, on top of his power, some just sublime touches. You know, the cutout pass for Johnston's first try. Jeezy threw an amazing catch and pass spiral from left to right that set up a try later in the game for Paulo. And it's funny because we all spoke about how on earth is the Storm's right edge defence, Seve Aramea, how are they going to stop that left sweeping attack of the Rabbitohs where the ball goes to Walker, out the back to Latrell, and obviously Johnston, who's the best finisher in the game outside that. And so because the Storm knew that was the case, then even though we are, you know, like we gave out a try scorer bet in the Winning Mood show, which did cash, we need 2 out of 3 try scorers. We had Johnston, easy as you like. He was paying in like the $1.80s, which was actually a pretty good price for a guy scoring so prolifically. And then we had Nanai, who got a double. So a couple of players had multiple opportunities. So that cashed. But my point was going to be the Storm aren't silly. The Storm aren't going to just be sitting back, you know, allowing the Rabbitohs to have their way with them down that edge. They're going to have to come up with a game plan. The game plan was to overload that side. And then that actually allowed the Rabbitohs some joy on the right-hand attack. And, that was shown the very first try. Kalau Matangi gone through untouched. And the Rabbitohs had joy on that right edge just as much throughout the night, you know, especially when Latrell got his hands on the ball on the right side of the field. So, yeah, the Bunnies, they look really good. They look like maybe top four caliber, whether they've spotted some sides above them too much of a start. And I know they do have some tough opponents coming up, but I agree, you would not want to be in front of this Rabbitohs side. For the Storm, okay, for one, if we all write them off and then on Tuesday we find out they're getting Reece Walsh at fullback and obviously Brandon Smith will be back after one more game suspension, they could still make the grand final. I think it'd be crazy to say they couldn't because I'm not, you know, I don't think these other sides like Cronulla, Cowboys, Brisbane are suddenly head and shoulders above Storm. I think the Storm have played 4 pretty good teams and, you know, lost Papenhuyzen, Smith got suspended, right, they're thin. If they can't cover the fullback, then I don't probably think they can make the grand final. Smith back will help, but it doesn't fix everything. And, you know, Munster, the excuse was, oh, they're nothing without Munster, but Munster's been there the last 2 games as well, and he can't do it all himself. And they're certainly lacking in experience, which is costing them both sides of the ball in the outside backs. So the trip to New Zealand will be an interesting one because if they're on their game and they're switched on, they should still be able to get back in the winner's circle next week. But New Zealand's playing with a lot of pride and emotion and energy at home at Mount Smart now, as we saw. And they face West. So that will be a fascinating one to watch. Of course, you'll get our preview of that on Wednesday along with all the games. One more to talk about. Bulldogs 36, Titans 26 this afternoon. The Bulldogs, well, I think deserved winners. And I think it's another game that shows that this Bulldogs side is a different team since Potter has taken over and playing some good, you know, attacking footy as they did a week ago and got quite close to beating South Sydney. But I will make one point. You win the game by 10 points and you had 2 length of the field intercept tries by Adokar as well. So the Titans can't take much of a trick, can they, put on us?
No, they can't. And especially when one of those intercepts, the very first one, was a bit contentious whether or not he was onside. I know that the NRL ruling is that once it clears the play the ball, it doesn't have to be the dummy half picking the ball up. So I think there was a slow-mo that showed Adokar did have his foot touch and go on the try line. So you could say that's fair, but there's been other times where, and you touched on it in your comment in the group, other times where the marker jumps on the ball when there's no dummy half after it's played and they get caught offside almost every time when it's the same rule should apply for both. But I think the Dogs have become the NRL's entertainers outside of the top 8 sides. They've really found a groove in attack, and Matt Burton was excellent himself. And I think in the second half, the Titans put in a bit more of a fight and a bit more effort. I think that first half, the Dogs had the game pretty much wrapped up at halftime, scoring 26 points and take away those 2 long-range tries and some of their interplay, all the offloads that they do in the middle of the field. It's pretty great to watch, and highly refreshing for Dogs fans because you've been at the bottom for so long, but definitely have a side that is improving. And I think the Bulldogs are going to be the one thorn in many sides heading into the final 5 weeks because they could help influence top four when I look at the draw that the Dogs have. And the Dogs have to still play the Cowboys, they play Parramatta, and they play the Sharks. So it's definitely going to be harder for those sides than it would have been in round 10, but should be an interesting final six rounds.
I'm glad you didn't like the Titans this week because I was tempted thinking the plus 4.5 and it would have, you know, arguably been, it would have been painful to watch, as you say. Like I always talk about, you know, people can say, oh, a key player was ruled out before the game or the bunker ruled on a try or no try and these big moments. And no doubt big moments can swing the final score by a number of points. But an intercept try is about as big a swing as you get, especially if the attacking team might have scored. And when you consider that the Titans were on the goal line both times, even if you say, you know, could they have scored once out of either of those occasions compared to the Bulldogs getting 12 free points, it could radically change the outcome of this game, especially the Titans being a confident side. They obviously all dropped their heads when Adokar got that, and he got a hat-trick, in fact, in this one. But I will say the Titans were down over 20 points before they scored back-to-back, and I think they scored twice off kicks, including one that was kind of lucky bouncing in the in goal and getting to it, you know, a centimetre before the dead ball line. So they weren't exactly opening up the Bulldogs. We got a Jaden Campbell sighting, which is always a positive thing, and he's always threatening when he's on. I thought that the Titans should have stuck with what they found in Aaron Clark, playing him from the start at lock. They did eventually bring him on, and I would have played Tino in the middle. But again, like we talk about the Bulldogs, and we talk about what a great job Potter is doing, and he's got them all playing confident, free-flowing, and enjoying their footy. And what are we usually talking about with the Titans every week? Questioning their coaching decisions, questioning their buy-in. So at the end of the day, a side that is happy and is fighting hard and is playing together and was in front of their home fans, had a comprehensive win over a side that doesn't know where they're going and has one win, as I said last week. The Gold Coast Titans have one win since March. And that was a golden point win that they only won because for many reasons, but one being Zach Lomax couldn't kick a pretty easy conversion late in that game in Magic Round. So you're talking about, you know, if one kick is different, the Titans could be on like a 14-game losing streak or something. So they've struggled mightily. This is a side that made the finals last year. So they've kind of only got themselves to blame. It would be short-sighted or narrow-minded to say, oh, we lost by 10, we threw two intercepts, so we were like the better team. When you got your tries late and you never really at any point in the game looked like you were the better side. So well done to the Doggies. And guys, you know, if we talk about making the finals or whatnot, I mean, our best bets, we've kind of most of the season struggled with a losing record. We never promised that we were going to be able to turn it around because you can't. You can't predict what's going to happen. All you can do is give it your best shot. But here we are, 32-29. If we were an NRL side, we're now in the top eight. You know, and we're heading in the right direction. And I say again, go back. You'd have to go back a lot of weeks to find a game we got wrong where we had a best bet. Because I know we had a Cronulla game. We lost two best bets, even though they covered the line and we liked Cronulla. I know we had a Dragons-Souths game where we liked Dragons to keep it close and they were too good. Like, so even the ones we've lost in like the last 5 or 6 weeks, I don't think we saw them too wrong. And on top of that, we've won 7 in a row. Now, that most recent best bet winner, of course, could so have easily have lost. And I was typing up our latest record and I was typing 2-1 for the round, right? So these are the margins. And then I had to edit that and I was happy to edit that to a 3-0, making us 7-0 on best bets since I became a TikToker. That's right. I'm doing individual TikToks for the games now and we're yet to lose in the last 2 weeks in our best bets. So of course, I have to keep that up. So follow Tripod_betting if you're on that platform. Thank you for joining me, Podonis. What a crazy round. We're really hitting some nice form. It could be better. As I said before, 23-1 multi goes begging, and I took an AFL leg, and I'll put my hands up for that. But I picked a team that was coming 10th to pull an upset over the team coming first, and they had a fourth quarter lead. It come down. It was a tied game with 5 minutes to go. We got $2.30. People, of course, after the game telling me, oh, they were never going to win, or why'd you take, you know, a team lower on the ladder and stuff. Look, my instinct was that was a great opportunity for Port. I was thinking again today, that's the second multi this year that Port Adelaide has cost us, and we're an NRL betting show, so it's kind of messed up, but I was trying to, you know, obviously get us some juicier odds on Dabble. 23-1 it was, goes begging because all the NRL legs did cash. And I knew if the one leg that lost was AFL, I'd cop it. So I do have to accept that criticism. But all in all, guys, yeah, definitely we're going in the right direction. And most importantly, the work that we're putting in is being reflected, and we're giving you pretty good advice on how a lot of these games are going to turn out. And it's finally reflecting in our best bets. And we'll do the same on Wednesday. And we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we hope we will see you then as well. Have a great week. Lego.